I wasn't as out and I wasn't as outspoken or free with my conversations when I first got in here. I was a little worried, you know, about rejection. So I can say that, you know, as a young person coming from heterosexual life to my gay life, it was quite a shock to see and to feel the discrimination.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Laura Latourette, who is a financial planner who describes her practice as one designed to help LGBTQ plus folks make a plan to simplify their lives to enable them to live authentically and leave a legacy of love. Based at her own 18-acre farm in Dahlonega, Georgia, Laura has been a financial planner for over 20 years and is also a National Resource Center ambassador for LGBT elder issues. Welcome, Laura. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we love having your support. And let's start by talking about your background and career journey. Can you tell us where you grew up, what your early interests were, and how you ultimately chose this as a career?
Sure. Well, I grew up in the city in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I grew up around a university and grew up around education. My father was a professor and my mom became a teacher. So I grew up in that area. A lot of social activism went on. You know, my parents were part of the social justice movement, things like that, growing up in the 60s and the 70s. So we had a lot of that activism, I guess I would say. So as a teenager, though, I took a little different route. I divorced my parents when I was 15 and moved into foster care a couple of years and then moved back out. So I've always been a very independent person and I've always been someone who wanted to carve their own path. I didn't do anything just the way I guess you're supposed to do it. So that's kind of how I grew up. And then I got to Georgia, met a wonderful person, one wonderful man, and had two wonderful children and realized I had a hole in my heart. So when I was 30, I decided that I really needed to become authentic with who I was in the world and realize that I was a lesbian. It was a time in my life where I really was struggling with who I was. So it was really important to me to be honest and open and out with my former husband. He was lovely. He was wonderful. His family still loved and supported me. But after I met the woman that I am married to today, my wife, Susan, I decided it wasn't good for me to pretend to be living in a heterosexual lifestyle. And I moved fully into who I am as a person. So the kids and I moved up to the mountains. And that's where we live today. I've been with Susan 29 years and opened my practice in the mountains in North Georgia. So that's kind of how I got there.
Well, just before we move into your practice, so we spoke earlier and you said that you moved to a farm because you wanted to not wait till retirement to achieve that. So can you tell us about what drew you to the land, having grown up in the city, and just describe that farm a little bit for us?
Yeah, I did. I was a city kid, a scrapping city kid. But I really, my heart was in farming and gardening, and I loved to grow things. And so I also am a canner. We do a lot of food prep where we're either freezing food or preserving it by canning it. And so I really like that feeling of being part of earth-based food. So we have 26 raised beds. We grow a lot of our own vegetables. It's a small farm. I would call it a homestead farm. I always wanted to live on a farm. And I guess being raised in the city, I felt like I'd already lived that type of life, and now I wanted to see what that was like. But I wanted to do it while I was young and strong and able to, not wait till my 70s or 60s even. So we moved up there, you know, I was 34, Susan 36, and we cultivated this farm and did all the fencing and raised llamas. We've had llamas for 25 years and have really enjoyed that. We use them for our compost. What you do is they have poop like rabbit poop, and you gather it together and use it for compost, and it's wonderful. So that's what we do. And we also have chicken pens, so we have our own eggs, and we've got 5 dogs right now. So we've always had animals coming and going and just kind of live pretty sustainable property. I'm not a vegan, but I don't eat four-legged meat. I just eat fish. So a lot of what we do is grow what we eat. And then I will harvest my herbs. So I grow all my own herbs and dry them, and I grow flowers for tea. So we're always doing things that are just part of the earth. It's pretty simple. It's a simple kind of life. My clients like it because I will bring them homemade jam or pickles. I'm known for my pickles. So we're always giving clients jars of things for holidays, birthdays, or just in general.
Well, let's start to talk about those clients now. So you became a financial planner. Can you just tell us what drew you to that walk of life? And then also what, I suppose, the gap in the market was that led you to start your own firm with its very unique focus?
Yeah, well, I got licensed in 1993. And, you know, I came into the business initially through the insurance industry. My daughter actually needed some growth hormone, and it wasn't available on the market back then. And my former husband got laid off, and I was working part-time. And I said, well, then I will go work in the insurance industry because this has to be covered. We need money to cover this. And so I did. I went to the insurance industry, and we were able to continue with getting her on her medical needs, and things flourished. But what got me into the financial services industry was because as I was finding out who I was as a person and really owning my lesbian self, I realized I didn't want to damage my former husband financially. I didn't want us to just go downhill because of a divorce. Divorces can really damage people financially. So I said to self, I needed to learn more about retirement, because I wasn't going to take any of his retirement funds. I was running the household budget, of course, but I needed to know more about cash flow and household budget. I'd always been an entrepreneur, and I was working as an entrepreneur back then as well. So rather than just having it kind of be self-employment, I wanted to learn how to run a business. How do I run something that's sustainable? Because if I have a business, then I have something to give my children and something to offer, and maybe something to sell one day. So that was just kind of how I thought as I was deciding to get divorced and all those things that were happening. And when I moved up to the farm and Susan and I got together, she's a massage therapist. So she was working full-time as a massage therapist and actually helped me understand how to structure some of my business so that I was working in a lifestyle business. I was working with people I liked and people I trust, and working just during the day, not at night, not on the weekends. So I just kind of started structuring it like that, because that's how she was structured. And as a woman in the business, there were not a lot of us. I would go to conferences and be the only woman, or there may be a couple of other girls that I could talk with, but there really weren't a lot of us. So I got really interested in how do we bring women into the business, and why are they not here? I think there were 20% in the financial services industry back there in the early 90s. There's still only 23 or 26% now. We haven't made a lot of strides as far as I'm concerned. So I got involved with women's groups and got on the board of women's groups and just started to make noise about, I think it's time for women to have businesses and to create businesses. And we're just as strong as men, if not stronger, in business. But one of the things we do is we want to create a business around our families, however our family structure is built. So I started talking to women about the women's model. You can structure a business around your kid's school day or around your family caretaking. It doesn't necessarily have to be the way men were doing it back then. And so I think that got some traction. And I know just from talking with other women all these years, a lot of us do it that way. And yes, maybe sometimes we build it a little slower, but the sustainability and the strength and the foundations a lot of times very strong. And that's how I see that today, 30 years later. I have a very strong practice and very strong relationships with my clients. And still I'm a full-time mom. You know, my kids are now grown with kids of their own. So I'm a grandma and I see my grandkids on a regular basis. And, you know, I have plenty of time with my wife, and my personal life is vivid. It's not just something I do as a second thought after work.
And you do. I would just advise our listeners to look at your Twitter profile or your LinkedIn. There are some wonderful nature-filled pictures posted from time to time, which definitely brighten my day, especially on your dreary day. So thank you for that. And in particular, you focus on your whole LinkedIn description, your practice description is around the LGBT client. And a sense I get is that they may be underserved, perhaps by mainstream financial services planners and providers. What's your sense as to how that client is served and how are you trying to address that?
Yeah, I've always, since I've been a part of the LGBTQ community, I've always been able to support the community either with financial literacy or a couple of pro bono cases a year, and just wanting to make sure that they know that there is someone they can trust that will hear them and see them for who they are. Living in North Georgia has not always been easy for being a lesbian or just being out in the LGBTQ community. So I just felt like it was important for me to not only walk my walk, but talk my talk. So I just wanted to make sure that since I was comfortable being out and I was comfortable just being who I am, that some people may not be, but I wanted them to know I was here in the community. I got really activated back in 2016. The political environment here is very hot right now. You know, we've got a lot of debates going on and a lot of our rights are being taken away. So I thought, well, what can I do to make sure that I am resisting and I am part of something that will help this community and not lose our rights? So I really got involved in doing a lot more things on a national level, and I was a lot more active on social media and wanting to make sure that I'm not trying to make people uncomfortable, but I want to normalize the conversation. Gay, lesbian people are in every walk of life. We're in every family. We are active members of the community. We are productive people. We have good family relationships. Not all of us are rejected. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure that there was also that voice. I thought that was important. Being a grandma, I can also come through from another perspective, I think, sometimes, where I've seen things in 30 years and what's happened to my community and what happens to people in this country that we're talking about are underserved. So I am starting to change that dialogue as well. I want it really to be resilient communities because people are resilient in these communities. That's why we're still here and that's why we're still standing. So I really enjoy working with my LGBTQ clients, and we became a remote operations in my business about 6-7 years ago. And so when COVID hit, we were already remote. And what I realized was then people started looking online and trying to find us, trying to find a lesbian financial planner or someone in the LGBTQ community. And so then it really started to amplify and say that what I was doing and how I was speaking out and how I was making myself available to people was really important. And I've had moms call me and hunt me down because they've got transgender children. And they're like, you know, my husband just died recently and I'm worried because I don't want to tell their financial planner we've had for years. I really need someone who just will understand and help me. Because what am I going to do? I want to leave my money to my child and I don't want them discriminated against. So I just felt, oh my gosh, this is such a honorable place to be. I mean, oh my gosh, to help someone really be able to find someone they can trust to make sure they can preserve their wealth for their family is what we do. I'm a CFP. That's what I do. And my community is really where I like to focus because I think they need us maybe more than others. I don't know. Just because they want to come to a conversation with their full self and talk about everything. And I want to know their stories and how they learned about money and how they learned how to spend money and what do they value. And you can't have that full conversation if they leave off part of it because they're afraid to tell you that they're gay. So I just got really passionate about it, especially in the last 6-7 years, and said, well, I'm going to do this till I retire. And then I'm going to probably be a motivational speaker or something. I think people need to put a face with a voice. And I think there needs to be a voice in our community that is middle America. We live in middle America. We live in all different economic situations, obviously, but we're mainstream. This is not something that you choose to do. It's something that you choose to be authentic about. Maybe I would have that conversation. Yes, I'm going to choose to live an authentic life and ask you to see me and hear me as a person, but I'm not choosing to be lesbian. So I will debate some things here and there.
Well, I'd love to pick up on that point of resilience, because I know you feel very strongly about advocating for LGBT elders in particular, because that may be an overlooked segment, maybe because there were particular issues there surrounding the many decades they've perhaps been in relationships that were not sanctioned as marriage at the time, and that maybe that has changed now for them. But how does their experience stand out to you as particularly maybe needing this kind of advocacy?
Yeah, the elders are really a passion for me, because if you think about the generations and what we've gone through as gay people, we had first a generation of silencers. And so the silenced generation, it was against the law to be gay. They could get fired. They were often mistreated by their families and left by themselves. And then you would have the incident of when AIDS came in. AIDS came in the 80s. And so a lot of the people in the silenced generation, they were hit with AIDS. So that became another issue that they dealt with in silence. So when you think of that generation, I really worry about how they then can afford housing, or how do they have enough in retirement? Because some of them, from what I hear when we talk, they didn't think they were even going to be alive this long. So they didn't worry about retirement, or they didn't put away enough money to worry about it, or they changed jobs every time they turned around and never really saved money. So you have some issues with the elders about that, because they're still afraid to say who they are. There's not a lot of safe places here in the United States that will house and care for LGBT elders. So they often, again, have to go back underground. So that's a very lonely and isolating thing that happens to them as well. So I really want to make sure that if, in fact, they need support and help, that I'm there to help with that. Help set up resources, help connect them, help to network, those types of things. Because I really think in the generations, we had different issues. My generation is the pride generation. We're the ones who protest. I'm in my 60s, and we're used to protesting and fighting and pushing and yelling and saying, yes, we are, yes, you can. So my generation, we still don't have a lot of safe places, you know, for us to go. But we seem to be a little more comfortable in our skin and able to say, well, I'm a gay person and you're going to have to treat me with love and respect. And again, I'm not talking for everyone, but that seems to be more of a feel for our generation. And then we have the millennials. Well, the millennials are gay and proud and out and doing it and all accepting. They don't even want to necessarily just run in the lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual. They're queer. They're non-binary. They are just wanting to be gender fluid. So they seem to be a lot more self-aware, and their generation seems more accepting. And so I don't worry about them as much, because I see them changing jobs because they want to for promotion. I see them supporting each other, having families, being open. And so that's why I guess the elders are just someone I think I've got to help protect. Maybe because I'm one of the pride generation and I'm used to being a warrior. So I just think I have to help protect them. So I went to SAGE USA, became an ambassador, and it's actually a national resource center. And so that would give me some kind of like credentialing, I guess, to give me education, to give me some information that I could have pass on to my community as well as allies. And what we're really wanting to do is take those allies and create advocates out of them. Being an ally is nice, but being an advocate, that's really what I'm interested in. So that's the other thing that I do, is just try to keep educating and try to keep people understanding what are some of our issues and what do we need as a community. So I guess being a spokesman for the elders has given me a lot in my heart. It makes me feel good at the end of the day when I know I've got this person we're taking care of, because they've come to us for financial planning and they may not have family support, but we help them build a formal family network so that we know who the trusted contacts are going to be, how are we going to handle emergency health situations, and what are we going to do to keep them in a quality of life through end of life.
And you spoke with the millennials, and certainly that level of openness is something that we'd all aspire to. However, on the ground, perhaps within a profession, within a professional group, it may not be as inclusive as all of that just yet. Can you talk us through what it's like to be out in financial services and how that's maybe evolved for you over the course of your career?
Yeah, I wasn't as out and I wasn't as outspoken or free with my conversations when I first got in here. I was a little worried, you know, about rejection. So I can say that, you know, as a young person coming from heterosexual life to my gay life, it was quite a shock to see and to feel the discrimination. I'm a white woman, dark hair, I can walk in a room and not have any worries about things in the financial services industry. So I don't look like they generally categorize lesbians, you know, when you see how we're generalized all the time. So when I came out and wanted to be authentic, I would say to self, then I'm going to have to be authentic also in these financial services circles. So I really did it in a small way where if I was on a board, because I was always on a board or committees or something, I would tell that committee, I would tell that board, I would have a small circle that I would entrust and generally would get some support. You know, there may be some eye rolling, there may be some eyebrows that raise, but generally they would be like, oh, really? I didn't know that. And I'm like, yeah, I am. Just want to make sure I'm putting a face with what lesbian looks like. Also, I raised kids and they lived with me full time. And Susan and I, when we would go places or I took them to the school, I introduced her as their stepmother. And there was a lot of worry. So I had to discuss and educate people around us of what we do during the day. How do we live? We're just a family. So I did the same thing in financial services. And then I guess as I continued to get more comfortable with myself, I broadened the horizon of who I was going to tell and when. So I would then openly say my wife. Well, back then she wasn't a wife because we couldn't get married. But I'd say, Susan and I, da, 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 da. And they're like, well, who is Susan? I said, well, she's my partner. Oh, you have a business partner? No, not a business partner, a life partner. I'm actually a lesbian. So I would kind of do it a little bit at a time, but in a more intentional sense. And then I guess as again, I continue to get older and people need to know, I tell them now up front, definitely in social media all the time, I've got it on there. But also when clients come in my introductory meeting, I want to make sure they know I'm lesbian. In fact, we email them an introductory kit, so to speak, and we tell them, make sure you Google Laura. Make sure you look at these brochures. Make sure you understand. Because I want them to know that up front. Because if there's any trust issues, I don't want to waste my time or deal with them. So, again, living in Georgia, there's been some of that. Plenty of it. There's plenty of times I know that they either didn't come in or they came in and decided not to work with me, which was fine with me. I know that there was plenty of discussion, you know, in financial services or in the chamber or business organizations I was in, that certain people wanted to make sure to stay away from me, make sure other people knew, which again was fine with me because I didn't want to waste my time if it was an issue. So it's changed a lot in some ways where now I think millennials have a lot to do with it, to tell you the truth. Now we are talking about DEI. You know, ever since George Floyd, there was this big focus on DEI, and major corporations are starting to really make sure there's diversity, equity, and inclusion. And now they've even added belonging to that and making sure they have something for their employees to help keep them together as units. And so I see that there is some good change there. I'm not sure if that's going to continue because sometimes I think we do things that are in the news for a while, and then we just let go of it and chase something else. That gives me a little worry. But I think overall, there's a more positive way to look at things now than there was back in 93 for sure. And now, like, even with pronouns, I'm very much interested in putting my pronouns out there so that people know to come find me. That certainly gives them an idea that I am someone that they can trust, or at least I am someone that is interested in knowing who they are as a person. So I think there's some different things that have changed over the years, but we still have a lot of work to do.
And would you say any particular things matter more than others? You mentioned your pronouns, you mentioned having your profile be very explicit about being lesbian and the kind of clients you try to attract. Have you found that, you know, in terms of creating that sense of belonging, which I think is a great word because it's ultimately something everybody needs, that certain initiatives, affinity groups, conferences, Pride Month, you know, works better than others?
Well, you know, I think inclusivity is really important. So there was a time where I was able to accept that if they had something for gay lesbians, even though it was at the end of the day in a small corner in the back and kind of off the way, that was okay. I don't feel that anymore. I think we've come further. I think we need to come further and be in the middle of the conversation. I've asked when I have a reporter wanting to do an article, you know, a lot of people want to talk about what's going on in June, but we're gay and lesbian all year. It's not just 1 month a year. So I say to them, put me in your article. Make sure you talk about me being lesbian or have a wife or do something, but put me in a mainstream article. Don't just have it be about lesbian. Don't just have it be about us, because I really want a broader audience to hear and see this. And so my idea in the next few years is really about how do we find a place that we really feel we belong, and we ask allies to become advocates to make sure that we all have that sense of community. And I'm really focused on that. I was listening to a speaker last year, and I love the way she put it when someone who was hosting the panel said, well, I think we've come a long way. Everybody seems to be blended in. And she was like, no, we don't want to blend in. We want to be more like a mosaic. We want to be individuals. We want you to see our brilliant, vibrant colors. But we don't want to blend in. We want to have it be more of a mosaic or a tapestry where we are part of the community, accepted, honored, valued, part because of who we are as people, what we contribute, not necessarily who we love. So I think that's what I'm really pushing for now, is more of a sense of belonging to be in that tapestry and belonging to be in something that is part of the community, and it's not just some alternative group or alternative lifestyle or underserved. I don't like the word under there. So I'd rather say resilient. So how does the resilient community and the people who have been in it really get their place in the community as a whole, just because of who they are as people?
I love that. And also the idea of the journey from ally to advocate, because obviously there's a lot more active intentionality around being an advocate than simply being an ally, although allyships is clearly very important as well. Just finally, before moving on to some personal reflections, so how do clients find you? How can they find you? Social media, any other way?
Yeah, it's interesting because if you Google lesbian financial planner, LGBT planner, you will find me usually, or lesbian or LGBT CFP, because I'm a certified financial planner. I'm also certified lesbian-owned business, so the National Gay Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. I've been a member of that organization for years, and you can find me there. CFP board, of course, I'm an ambassador for the CFP board, but I'm also, if you were to look it up, it's hard to find LGBT planning unless you go down a few levels. So I'm really trying to work with that organization to get that towards the top of the search engine. And then you're going to see, I think in the future, some of the other organizations in financial services being able to have LGBTQ at the top of search engines. I've been working with a couple of them right now to see if that's possible so that you can find us. It's difficult. It's one of the things I will be working on in 5 years, and I have been with other people in the industry, because I said LGBTQ communities cannot find the planners. And there was a really good survey done with some guy through a friend of mine with Queer Money Podcast. And they're also the debt-free guys. They worked with Motley Fool last year and put together an incredible survey about the LGBTQ community and what we need and what we want and what financial struggles we have. Really good stuff. So we're hoping as we start to work together and identify each other, we'll be able to build this rainbow network so that you'll find us nationally and you'll find the resources that you can find that, and it won't be so hard.
Well, I'd love to move on to some personal reflections now. And I just want to note that since we are talking to you from a farm and we have a little bit of your dog in the background, that we're a very inclusive podcast here. So we include all animals and all are welcome on this. Just now, if you look back, were there any setbacks or challenges in particular over the course of your career or just, you know, the personal experience so far that you learned lessons from? You speak a lot about resilience. What was the building block of your resilience?
The building block of my resilience, I was never taught to be a good girl. So I do thank my parents for that. Although they weren't protective parents and there was some definite trauma in my childhood, I at least was never told to be a good girl and shut my mouth. I was told to ask questions. I was told to be curious. I was told to always check things. So those kinds of things I think now have been skills of mine because I didn't just sit by and was hand-delivered what career I was going to have or what life path I was going to have. I really was able to design it the way I wanted it. So I say to younger folks, be who you are. Just be who you are. And if you are strong in who you are, then what you will do and how you will be productive and valuable in the world is because of the strength of knowing who you are as a person. And then I've also believed, and I have definitely done this, and tell my grandkids, you may be the only one in the room standing for something. You stand strong. You need to stand tall. Because sometimes that leader is the one we're looking for, and it may be you. And so that's another thing I think is, you know, don't shy away from leadership responsibilities. Don't shy away from having an idea and walking it through to see if it's a good one. You may fail. I've failed plenty. But I think the other thing is if you are who you are and you're comfortable in your skin and you know you're doing good work, even if sometimes it's lonely for a while, you will find your people. You will find a place of belonging because they will seek you out because of the consistency of how you show up.
Well, I think that's a wonderful place to end our discussion. Laura, you speak about standing tall and you do stand literally very tall, but equally metaphorically too, your presence in the industry is such an inspiration. And as are your many posts, and I don't often say this, but you were definitely one of those guests where I say, I don't know how you do it all, from your canning to your animal husbandry, to your wonderfully inspiring posts of landscapes and just your cheerleading for all of us, which is something that we don't do enough for each other. And I thank you for doing it for your community, for our industry as financial planners, and for the rest of us who are looking in and looking to learn how to be activists ourselves. So thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.